work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping. Stamps.com will simplify your postage needs and add valuable time back into your workday, so you have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off UPS and USPS. Send invoices, checks, certified mail, packages, and anything else you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. If you sell online, connecting with every major marketplace and shopping cart is easy. Plus, you can schedule package pickups through their dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with Stamps.com's Rate Advisor. Add more flexibility to your workday with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans.
$829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for this week's One Last Thing with co-host Slava Cooperstein. Slava, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing great after win, Ken, except unfortunately every Steelers fan that I personally know has been frustratingly very magnanimous in defeat. So, you know, that kind of takes the wind out of my sails about being a huge jerk about it.
Don't they understand the needling process and what it is supposed to do? I mean, Jesus, that's ridiculous.
He just looked defeated, man. I ran into the guy today and he just looked deflated. But, you know, I'll take the win and roll with that.
They're on to their next crusade, which is to get rid of Mike Tomlin. But that's all they can talk about right now over there. And it's interesting because the national media is really picking up on this now. And, you know, Rich Eisen is talking about it and whatnot. And they're all coming from a little bit different perspective, which I think is good. You don't want to have the news all reported the same way and just be an aggregation of, you know, basically one or two ideas that get not much additional added to them by a lot of the lazy national media, frankly. But the one from Eisen I thought was good. He's saying basically, don't think of it from the Steelers' perspective. The Steelers, yes, they can benefit from having Tomlin move on and getting a fresh set of eyes on the problem, maybe getting a better game manager who you know, there's less cowardly punting, which was a big issue in this game. Mm-hmm. And do that. But think of it from Tomlin's perspective. He's a Hall of Fame coach. He's been struggling in a division with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks and he doesn't have one. And right. That's just, it's, you know, he is doing well for that circumstance. It's kind of like mid-table Premier League teams who maintain their, you know, avoid relegation for, you know, two decades and things like that. Those teams are doing something to do that, even though their fans are never really happy with it.
I always think back to when the Ravens moved on from Billick and they said, you know, the big thing that they said was he lost the locker room. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real concern for the Steelers. If you look at the effort on some of the plays, that we saw in that game. Some of those guys just wanted to go home. They didn't believe in what the Steelers were doing. You know, kind of felt that even if they pulled it out, you know, somehow forced the Ravens into a couple of mistakes, they weren't really going anywhere. And so all I can say is it's good to be looking from the outside in to that sort of situation. And we should consider ourselves fortunate to be in the position that we're in.
It's some of the Steelers' big money players who are doing this. Patrick Queen is the free agent they paid the most for. How Patrick Queen's people handled the discussion of this after the game, I thought was very interesting, because Queen apparently had his agent, or Queen's agent, felt the need to go to people who had identified Queen's lack of effort in the game. It's very noticeable. I mean, there's no effort at all. He's dogging in on plays. He's loafing like crazy. He's chronically averse to contact. And that was really true with the Ravens too. He wasn't a big guy who really liked contact. When he did have contact, of course, he had huge wrap-up problems as a tackler in Baltimore. But setting that aside, in this game, he was really averse. He's like playing like a guy who wants to make sure his next stop is wherever he's going on vacation. And then the Queen's camp came out and said he was sick and he had 4 IVs that day. Okay, that may or may not be true. It may be an exaggerated number, whatever the thing is. I think it's something, the fact that they felt the need to come out and defend him in that way is basically saying one of two things. That Queen probably asked out of the game, and Tomlin convinced him to play against his better judgment, whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. And then it's also completely validating exactly what everyone can see on tape, that the Queen was dogging it during the game, for health reasons or not. If you're a Patrick Queen fan, if you're a Patrick Queen apologist, this is a hard game to watch.
Not a whole lot, a lot of good tape from that one for sure. Hopefully that doesn't affect him too much heading into the next season. But, if it's his last, if those were his last snaps in Pittsburgh, it wouldn't be a huge surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on, because you came with this idea for a show yesterday. I thought it was a great one. Is we're going to talk about what levers the Ravens pulled against the Steelers in that wild card game and what they maybe still have available. So we're going out on a limb here, particularly in terms of the available stuff, but they pulled several levers against the Steelers that were very evident and certainly had a big hand in the win. But why don't you start us off?
Yeah, and just for the listeners out there, I wanted to let you know that we were originally going to go with top 10 reasons that why we should re-sign Deontay Johnson, but you and I were just unable to limit it to only 10. So we had to go with something a little bit easier.
How weird is that story, for starters? How freaking weird is that? That there's another team. Because literally, as we're getting on here, I'm looking for meme generators. Now, I've never done that. I'm not a meme guy. Oh, no. But I said, is there some meme generator for a seesaw that I could show, weight of empirical evidence on one side, on the other side is Deontay Johnson is just fine kind of thing.
Right.
And apparently there is. There's an easy meme generator for exactly that. And you have to put text in on both sides. That's great.
Did you hear that? Like, there are more details that came out. I don't know if it was last night or this morning, but like, the scene is that like the Texans players are like lighting up cigars in the locker room, celebrating their win. Uh-huh. And and all of a sudden people are having to console him because he didn't like his role in the game. It's unreal.
History repeats itself.
truly. I worry about that guy's mental state. So I hope that he's merely a jerk and that it's not something more serious, but that's another thing we can be fortunate to be rid of ourselves. That's one lever that we will not need to pull. But as far as levers that were pulled, you saw in this game a number of things. Primarily, I would say on the offensive side that the Ravens did. One of them was heavier personnel that the Ravens used to make up for the absence of Flowers. Now, it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing, because obviously Flowers' absence makes the Ravens look for different ways to win. But it just so happens that it was already proven to be like a very effective, very effective strategy against the Steelers as kind of evinced by their last win. But the Ravens, of course, used a lot of extra offensive linemen on, I think, close to 15 or 16 snaps. Mostly Johnson coming in, but I think Cleveland came in one time, as well as use of a lot of two tight end sets. Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
I was going to say 2.39 heavies per play in this game was by far their heaviest of the season. And it really was a big number. They're going up against a team that does a lot of those same things. And I've got a lever that the Ravens could pull to try and combat that later on. Or maybe you do. But anyway, whoever says it first will have it. I'm going to pick something else here. I'm going to say that the wide receiver usage on the wide receiver usage was very different. So they didn't have Flowers. They used Wallace, Sims, and Miller way more than I would have expected. All three of them. Wallace led the Ravens in wide receiver snaps with 39. Sims played, I think, 13 snaps, and Miller played 9, but he had 3 targets. Sims had a big run to move the football on the big answer drive of the third quarter. But if you look at the final drive of half one, that's like a microcosm for how efficient the Ravens were using in non-standard personnel. If you go through that drive really quickly, they had 2 runs to start it off for 8 yards. That led them down to 114. Pittsburgh called a timeout in part to get the ball back, but also in part to force the play call on third down and see if they could get the Ravens to force a run, get a stop, and possibly get off the field. But even just forcing a run would have been good to kill a timeout for the Ravens. So they called a timeout with 108 to play. Actually, I'm not sure that last thing really makes sense. But anyway, they called a timeout with 108 left to play. They thought it might force the play call is what I would say. Jackson completed a 9-yard pass to Bateman. Then the next 5 plays, pass deep middle on the scramble to Aguilar for 25. Pass short left to Miller for 4 yards. Really a bad play. Inbounds, they had to use their last timeout on that play. But it was a few yards, and it was Miller. Then with 37 seconds left, a pass short middle to Andrews. He had a big catch and run for 20 yards. Ran out of bounds, so preserved a bunch of clock. Then the pass short middle to Likely. He ran for 19 yards, almost got in the end zone, but he's taken down the 5-yard line. What does he do? Picks up the football, runs to the hash mark, puts it down, and gets in position himself. It saved a couple of seconds from the officials doing it themselves. Lamar Jackson spikes the ball to stop the clock. Doesn't even really count as a play, but that gave him 11 seconds left to play. Then he has his miraculous scramble around the pocket, frustrating the hell out of TJ Watt, and then gets the ball off to Hill off on the right sideline, who is ad-libbing himself, he says, for the touchdown. 6 different completions, 6 different receivers, and you had Aguilar and Miller getting the ball in there, so and even Hill at the end. It's not your standard guys that are necessarily receiving. It's not your biggest weapons that are receiving. And they really kind of had to do that in the absence of Zay Flowers, but they also were remarkably successful at it. So I thought that was just that drive. I loved the Henry drive where he finishes it with a 44-yard run after they dig themselves out of first and 20, right, with the Wallace play, mm-hmm. and then had the Sims run. But I love this one even more in terms of the spreading the ball around within the last basically minute of the first half.
Yeah, they really sought to replace Flowers' production by committee, mm-hmm. Which is sort of what I anticipated that they would do. I didn't know what that would look like exactly. I mean, I figured that a guy like Tylan Wallace was going to get increased snaps, but like you said, not as many as you expected. And, you know, am I shocked that Sims was used in a jet sweep? No, but you definitely didn't see Miller having as many targets and receptions as he did. You know, just like Zay Flowers has sort of a gravity to him, the inverse is true, right? Like all of a sudden these guys, these unassuming players, they're not getting any extra attention. They're getting one-on-one matchups, and they were able to win those. And that kept some of the drives alive. Todd Monken bet that would be the case, and it paid off. So I would say actually probably the biggest, most obvious lever that the Ravens pulled this game was the commitment to the Lamar led run game. And it really, the difference in how much and the manner in which Lamar ran in this game makes you feel like at the outset of the season, the Ravens and Lamar had a conversation saying, we want to make, you know, you had to play through some injury last year that affected you throughout the rest of the season when it came to your running. And, you know, we want to win primarily with you, you know, limiting your exposure. And when we get to the playoffs, it's, you know, we're going to go all out and do what we have to do to win. And that's exactly what it felt like Lamar was doing. Lamar was running often, not just scrambling, but designed runs and with purpose. You saw a little bit of this with the last game against the Steelers. If you recall, Lamar was running, you know, his runs were not that productive in the first game, because I think they were really, really keyed in on Lamar, but it did open things up for Henry. And particularly in this game, when it was very clear that the Steelers defense switched it up and was crashing in on the running back just about every single time, Lamar was able to take advantage of it. It's a really good sign that Lamar, whether it's the pass or the run, is taking what the defense gives him and with purpose.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, by the way, on the notion that they had a different plan for the regular season and the postseason. And it's exactly what I would hope for, is that basically all controls, all seals are off in terms of Lamar Jackson being able to run the football on every play. They also, I mean, all misdirection components need to be in play for this postseason, particularly against teams like Buffalo and Pittsburgh, and with the weather that we might get this weekend. I mean, it's just critically important. And the Ravens did do some nice things to figure out how to block differently in this game. They didn't really use some of the trap blocking that we've seen the last couple of weeks, but they used some eligible receiver blocking in level two to try and take care of scraping players in a way we hadn't really seen much before. At least I hadn't noticed it before, let's put it that way. So I think all of the things that you mentioned about that were good. I've got a related note. I thought the direct snap to Derrick Henry was a big wrinkle that when they tried it during the regular season, they didn't basically create a play for themselves that added value. When you direct snap to Derrick Henry, the first thing you do is you take away the read option. So even as run here, Derrick Henry is not going to be reading leverage the way that Lamar Jackson does, or at all, when he turns his back to fake a handoff to Lamar. But Lamar, on that fake handoff where he's coming around, he certifiably impacted the defense on that play. And so that added a significant wrinkle to the Ravens run game. I generally do not like direct snap plays for that reason for the Ravens, for the reason that it gives up on the read option. But if you're going to do it, go ahead and do it. Just do it with a wrinkle like that, that there's a misdirection component. And if they did hand it off to Jackson next time, oh boy, would that drive some defensive coordinators crazy.
Oh yeah. I mean, they are putting things on tape with purpose, right? I mean, just like, you know, the Sims gadget play, right? Like that's, they're almost like, okay, we hope this works, but even if it doesn't, they need to know that we're willing to do it. And there's value in that. And I would just add that I think that we would be remiss to not mention the sort of the commitment to the tush-push with Andrews.
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of, you know, that's kind of along with the heavier personnel sort of thing. And also goes to one of our next points, right? I mean, there's a couple of value points there. Like, first of all, the tush-push is a play where it's easy to get rolled up on and potentially injured. So they were preserving Lamar, number one. Number two, you know, short yardage, you know, QB sneak type things have never been, you know, the best, you know, element of Lamar's game. And, you know, I think they found that they're very, very comfortable with Mark Andrews. I think they tried it with Kolar earlier this year, and I think Kolar maybe mishandled the snap or something like that.
Might have bobbed his head and had a penalty.
Yeah, might have been that. I remember something went wrong. But they're very happy doing this with Andrews, and they've been able to do it to great effect. I mean, I don't think that a single time they were stopped, and so I can see that being an element of their game moving forward.
Right. Yeah, that's that'd be something. Now, the next thing to do is find out how to pull Andrews out from under center and leave Lamar in the shotgun and then throw the ball from there, which would be another cool little twist. I don't know how surprising that would be. I just along that line, you know, you mentioned the preservation of Lamar, but the Ravens are doing two things already. And so you can consider this a lever pulled or maybe not. But with Bateman and with Owe, they are really making an effort to preserve both of those players. Now, we know the Ravens are very thin at pass rusher right now. They don't have a good next option if anything happens to Adafi Owe at rush linebacker. And they have Kyle Van Noy, who they really need to preserve as well as their primary Sam. But they've done a lot to keep Owe off the field. He played a lot more snaps in previous years, some of it out of necessity, particularly early in the season when the Ravens were pretty banged up. They're doing the same thing with Bateman. Bateman only played 35 snaps. He should be in a flowersless game, which is tight neutral game script all the way. You'd expect him to lead the Ravens in snaps, no question about it. But Wallace, in fact, led in snaps, and that's an indication they're really trying to preserve Bateman.
And they really love Wallace's run blocking, and that was a huge element there. It just goes to show that the Ravens are really, they're assessing live in game. Is what we're doing working? It is okay. Then let's really reap the benefit of, this is effective, and we until they can stop us, we don't really have to do anything different.
All right, let's talk about a few levers that the Ravens have not pulled so far in this game that they have left in the tank. They could pull out at any time. Maybe it comes against Buffalo. Maybe it never comes in these playoffs. Start us off.
Yeah. So one thing that we've sort of talked about in recent weeks, and you've talked about on some of your other shows, is using the corners to travel. Typically isn't something that the Ravens have done. Although I really don't believe that that the Ravens corners would be unable to perform, particularly Marlon Humphrey, if you were or Nate Wiggins, if you were to put one of those guys in a situation that they typically aren't in, and quite frankly, I think the benefit of a better matchup for Stevens might outweigh any discomfort he may have on being on a different side of the field.
Yeah, so Stevens can be moved around in multiple ways here. So you can have corners travel in a couple of different ways. But right now it is, I think, one of the really big potential weaknesses for the Ravens that the Bills know exactly where Brandon Stevens is every play at right corner if the Ravens play it the way they have the whole year. And that's going to allow them to match up big bodies on that left side, whether it's Keon Coleman, who's a true enormous body that you can throw back shoulders to, or even if it's Amari Cooper, who has good route running skills and probably can force some mistakes out of Brandon Stevens, but also be a back shoulder option. I think either way, leaving Stevens on an island over on that side of the field is potentially a weakness. Traveling with your corners takes some of that away. Even a little bit more rotation with Trey White would be good there. But let me give you the really extreme case on that. Don't just travel with the corners. Have Stevens back up to safety on some plays, and not a cover three look. I'm not talking about him playing that side of the field because they can do that anytime they want. I'm talking about actually moving him to be free safety and moving Hamilton back down into the nickel, say, and having Wiggins move over to right corner and have Humphrey be outside at left corner. It's a very different look. It'd be extremely effective, I think, as a run defense when the Bills get heavy in terms of trying to have extra players on the field. And you could go all the way to base defense, or you can go somewhere in the middle where Hamilton's closer to the line of scrimmage and you're really trying to make more there. But
wow, what's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hamilton's a big weapon, and Stevens is the key to unlocking him if they want to put him on the back end.
Do you agree or disagree, or which offense do you think presents a more of a challenge for Brandon Stevens? Would it be the Steelers or the Bills?
For Brandon Stevens, I still would say it's probably not the Steelers, and yet the Steelers took advantage of it in terms of outside there. I'd still say it's the Bills. I think the Bills have better personnel over there. Mike Williams is a longtime veteran receiver though, and he took advantage right away of what was going on. So they just don't have as many weapons, and the Ravens are more adept at making Wilson feel uncomfortable. And yet, he had a big second half, and the Ravens really in the secondary had their first concern show up since week 10, and it's not a time you want that to happen. So I think I would at least say the Ravens need to go into this game with answers. And if I had to pick the offense that I think is most able to take care of it, it might not be the Bills. It might be the Chiefs. It might be the Lions, if they have to face them. Don't think it's the Eagles. And it might or might not be the Texans, but we'll see if what team is the appropriate time to pull out some sort of a hybrid role for Brandon Stevens, which would allow the Ravens to reshuffle that back end.
Yeah, definitely a lot of options in the secondary that I think are realistic. They're not, this isn't fantasy football. I think the personnel are capable of making these changes.
Right.
Another lever that the Ravens can pull on the defensive side, I would say, is using Pearson Jones on the field at the same time against some of the six offensive line looks. The Bills did use that 17 times versus Denver, and I believe they led the league by a pretty wide margin through the regular season on six offensive line looks. We typically don't see Pearson Jones on the field at the same time. Usually you get one or the other, and they're very committed to doing that. But, I don't remember if it was Preston or who in the media, but back when it was Pierce and Brandon Williams on the field at the same time, they said it was like two fire hydrants right next to one another, that kind of thing. Two guys that on their own tend to command double teams, that's a lot to deal with. And that would, I think, go a long way towards neutralizing the six offensive line looks.
Yeah. I could easily see that basically taking away that scheme from the Bills, their look to get heavy. It has some certain advantages. They can take the slot corner off the field. They can do some things because of it. But they, if you do that, and the response by the Ravens is to get super heavy like that, and you've then lost an eligible receiver in order to do that, I think that's a big sacrifice. And I think it's the kind of thing the Bills could really regret if they try and do that, and they might stop doing it. Anderson is the guy who comes on as their sixth offensive lineman a lot. 17 times this last week, and it's something that it's a very big part of their offense. Obviously, they're very successful running the football last week. I saw somewhere else that averaged about 9 times per game using a sixth offensive lineman. The Ravens did it 16 times this last week too. So January is a great time to be really concerned about sixth man strategy. I'm gonna flip to something on the offensive side that I think the Ravens could do, and that is putting a sixth offensive lineman on the field. I think has an advantage for the Ravens. Yes, you really do force the Bills to get heavy and go to a base defense where they would have three down linemen. Okay, let me start with, you force them into a third down lineman by putting a sixth offensive lineman on the field. That typically means the team goes from nickel to base because they're really a committed nickel team. By going from nickel to base, they take Taron Johnson, who's one of their best defenders, off the field. It's something that I would not want to sacrifice if I were the Buffalo Bills defensive coordinator. I'd be trying to figure out how to make Taron Johnson be an X factor in this game and be a playmaker, because that's what he's been for the Bills. Of course, we know, remember the touchdown he had against the Ravens in the 2020 game. What they can otherwise do is go to a jumbo nickel instead, but to do so, they have to have utter and complete trust in both their safeties as run fitters and their lone inside linebacker they leave on the field if they want to keep Johnson. And that also presents a much lighter lineup against which Henry runs. So if you get level two opportunities for first contact, Henry may be, a factor that you're going to have trouble making tackles on. So I think that the sixth offensive lineman for the Ravens in this game coming up against the Bills, I think presents real opportunity for the Ravens to get a key Bills defender off the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just one of the many ways that the Ravens may try to dictate the Bills personnel. And when you're sort of forcing them out of what they do best or what they're most comfortable with, I think that's always a situation that you're looking for in a playoff game. I would say that one of the most obvious obvious levers that the Ravens can pull is using Keaton Mitchell and featuring him sort of heavily. I mean, his absence was so conspicuous in the Steelers game that part of me is like, okay, well, why would they really, they're getting it done with Derrick Henry. So like, why even bother? But also, it just really felt like they're saying like, we're saving this for later down the line. So I don't know whether it's going to be this game or whether it's going to be the next game that they bring him back. But, Keaton Mitchell is such a different look than any other option in the backfield for the Ravens. Whether you're using him in jet motion or in gadget plays or just, having him bounce outside, or in a pony backfield, right? I mean, imagine him and Derrick Henry together. I mean, it's you're defending the two of them. It's two completely, utterly different things. And I just, I pity the defensive coordinator that would have to defend a look like that.
Yeah. It's a good one. I mean, if you put him out on the wide at some point and you motion him, you may really get a look you want in terms of a linebacker matchup that he can beat on a wheel route. You may really get an option that looks really good for getting him in jet motion. But as soon as you move him in that way, it creates opportunity for the offense, and they ought to learn more, I think, about what the Bills are doing from Keaton Mitchell in motion than almost anybody else. You learn less about what the coverage scheme is when you have Patrick Ricard in motion specifically. So it's an interesting thing. I would love to see it. This is a card, it's a trump card that you shouldn't hold in your hand for the entire game. You want to use it before the last trick and to at some key inflection point, it seems like, to get Keaton Mitchell out there and moving on the edge. I honestly don't think Keaton Mitchell's going to have a big impact in the backfield this year. I think they're fairly satisfied with what they have with Hill and Henry, and the RB3 carries this year being as ridiculously low as they've been would be a strong indication that that's true. But I think there is a good chance that we could see Mitchell, in a pony look where one running back is flexed out wide.
And he looked significantly better a few weeks ago than he did when they trotted him out the first game, his first game back. I think they wisely used him just very little, just to see like, okay, let's see where you're at physically. Mm-hmm. So after that, a few weeks later, I think it was against the Texans where he had, a couple of explosive plays, and, he doesn't look all the way back, but he looks back enough that I'm pretty bullish on what he's going to look like next year.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think those are six pretty good ones. Wait a minute. Did I not say one of mine? I'll give you one more. Cause I don't think they've done this. the Ravens really called off the dogs in the second half in terms of the pass rush against the Steelers. There is much more than they could do schematically. By the way, it's one of the previews of this game might have been the CBS Sports preview, which one of the guys who came on a short last week talked about the MVP voting analysis really thinks CBS is basically a tool, a sock puppet of the Buffalo media or Buffalo Bills in terms of promoting Josh Allen, which I think is pretty funny. But in this case, I thought this was funny that they got it so wrong. The CBS Sports thing said that the Ravens rushed or blitzed as often as they did all year in this game. Well, they used a off-ball blitzes and zone blitzes where they still rushed four. But as most people in the media define the blitz, it's rushing five plus. They only did that two times the whole game. They really relied on their secondary in a way that they hadn't even all year. This is a time where I think the Ravens will use potentially a lot more deception. And there's some value to it in a game like this if you rush extra people to get extra people in the backfield against the run too. So it has value there and good reasons to do it. You want to get after Allen. You want to be moving him towards the sideline to the degree you can. And I think that – I don't think the Ravens are going to play all cage against Allen and just trying to contain him that way. I think they're going to try and get after him, and particularly as soon as he gets out of the pocket, I think they'll try and get after him. So I think we'll see more scheme in the pass rush, and hopefully it'll be more effective than it was this last week against Russell Wilson.
You know, a team that has Marlon Humphrey and Kyle Hamilton, who are two of the best blitzing defensive backs in the entire NFL. I mean, and just consistently shoot out of the cannon, like, you know, and wrap up really well, which is something that a lot of DBs don't do. You know, you have to take advantage of that at some point. The Steelers didn't give them a reason to do that last game. I'm sure they would have been prepared to do so. And you can force Allen into making some, you know, silly mistakes, some strange plays. I would not be surprised at all if the Ravens did that. I did want to ask you, do you have any thoughts on, you know, could we see any, you know, like three tight end sets or anything like that? Especially if Flowers doesn't come back. And when I say three tight ends, I don't even mean necessarily Ricard in that situation. I'm talking Kolar.
So all three. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's possible. You know, the Ravens haven't shown a real desire to do it. It's usually Kolar or Ricard on the field and not both. Occasionally you'll see it in QB power and such. It has value, kind of like using a sixth offensive lineman that you might well get Teron Johnson off the field. But I think one of the real big headaches for opposing defensive coordinators is any time that any team puts 13 on the field and they have three credible receiving threats, then that creates a problem for how you align to try and stop that or what package you even use to try and do it. And they're obviously going to be much more effective running the football when you have three tight ends on the field than you would be with, say, 21 personnel or 12 personnel.
Yeah, no, it's not a fun team to game plan against, I would say. Yeah.
All right. And then I guess they're not really levers, but there's a couple of players that could come back. Talk about what the return of Zay Flowers would mean to the Ravens.
I mean, you know, we already mentioned kind of gravity, but it really is a real thing. I mean, Zay Flowers demands a lot of attention. He'll make safeties cheat towards his way. He'll peel people off in particular for Mark Andrews. Really make the kind of between level two and three game kind of thrive, which could also lead to more big plays for Rashad Bateman. A lot of people, it's true that in some of these games, including games against the Steelers, where the Ravens have had success, they didn't necessarily get many stat sheet contributions, box score contributions from Zay, but that doesn't mean that he's not having a tremendous effect on influencing how, you know, the back third of the defense is playing.
100% agree. And by far the most important Ravens return, I'd go to a second guy. And that's Deontay Hardy. The Ravens obviously have not been completely happy with their punt return game. That's to say the least. They've had a multiple failed punt returners with having problems getting to the ball, problems catching the ball, problems. Those are pretty much the big two. It's all you need is a couple fumbles, of course, and a couple of balls to hit the ground, and then things not go right in terms of the bounce. They got a little lucky this last week in terms of Sims recovering his own fumble, starting the Ravens back at the 5-yard line, and the field was not too long for them. And then he let a couple balls drop where they got a Ravens bounce on them and bounced back towards the punting team. So still, that was not a good return game for Sims. And I think that Deontay Hardy could potentially give the Ravens something back. There's a hesitancy to have him return that Harbaugh clearly kind of indicated through his passive language about it. It's basically you need to get the player ready physically, but also ready mentally. And he also, which it's kind of out of line. Maybe he's dealing with some personal issues, whatever that is. I mean, we don't need to know. And it's good the Ravens are trying to keep it in the house, but it kind of sounds like he's building up a few barriers as to why he won't play. And if that's a misdirection thing, that's fantastic. But I don't sense that at all with Flowers. If I'm trying to handicap the chance of him being back, I think the way that Harbaugh talks about players is generally very optimistic in terms of their return. He's not at all giving me any of that optimistic language. I have no special information. I have no medical information on Zay Flowers. Harbaugh is talking about maybe him getting, getting back on the field. We'll see how it do. We'll see how this plays out. My guess is Harbaugh, from that kind of conservative language, probably already knows that it's going to be a longer term thing for Zay.
Just briefly addressing Hardy first, my ears definitely perked up when I read that line about getting him mentally ready.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's I would hope that that isn't anything about like his, sort of what's going on in his personal life, but if he's having, behavioral issues or he's made some mental errors in practice that Harbaugh isn't trusting. I don't really understand the point of that comment to begin with, but there's a little bit of concern there. And then let me ask you, let's say the last day of practice, Zay goes from do not practice to limited.
Uh-huh.
What do you think happens on Sunday? Just at starter sit.
I guess he'd have a chance to play. I think that's the best case scenario for the Ravens is DNP limited. And we're recording this on Wednesday, so the first injury report comes out later today. I think that would absolutely be the best case. And I think that's not likely to happen, unfortunately.
Okay. And now let's say that it is DNP limited. And the thought process is if we were to activate Zay, he's in some sort of emergency receiver role and we are not intending to start him unless we have to. Do you think that's a wise use of that slot?
So at the end of their wide receiver group, six wide receivers, they got value out of Walker on special teams, although he only played two offensive snaps. They got value out of Miller, who plays special teams, and he gave them three catches, probably none of which were successes. It was 3-4 yard gains or whatever it was. It was a bunch of short passes. I'm not sure they got value out of that spot, but if they brought back Flowers, he's not playing special teams. So it's a -1 on special teams. It would have to serve some real purpose of we're putting Zay Flowers on the field. All of a sudden they perk up and they think about how they need to change their defensive alignment. There is some value to having being limited on Friday strictly for that is the Bills have to kind of improve in the game plan. But I don't think that if they all of a sudden said an hour and a half before the game that he's not playing, I'm not sure how much it really impacts things. I'm not sure I think the Ravens would go with a similar game plan to what they did against the Steelers. It might or might not work, but he is absolutely enormous. I'm first to say that, but the issue may be he just really can't help the Ravens in this next game or possibly even for the rest of the year. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. I'm kind of at, if he's at 80% or better, and they don't feel that there's a serious risk of reentry, if they're like, you know, it's just a, at this point, it's just a pain tolerance thing, or at this point, you're just going to, you know, it's just going to get better day by day. We don't, you know, like you're not at a re-injury risk, then yeah, I think you have him available. But if there's a heightened re-injury risk, I think that the Ravens should be confident in the personnel that they have and in the matchup that Buffalo presents to them defensively, and what they're able to do, enough so that they hold on to Zay with the hopes that he will come back fully healthy for the, or as close to fully healthy as possible for the AFC Championship.
Let me give you the flip side of that for one more moment, is that if you were going to miss Zay Flowers for a game, this might really be the one. First of all,
yeah,
very cold, very windy, holds down the passing game. You want better run blockers on the field. All those things are basically counter to the argument that you need Zay Flowers and that you might be happier with a Wallace on the field. Wallace proved his mettle as a receiver in this game, really has done it all year, and also, you know, it did some good blocking, so he can provide you value on that. And that's basically the guy who gets the Zay Flowers snaps.
Yep.
If he's out. And then I guess if you're, yeah, I'll leave it there. I think that the Ravens, if they're going to miss Zay Flowers for one more game, this might be it. And it might have some real redraw value in terms of a health gain for Kansas City for him not being there. I'm just not sure with a sprain, if that's ever going to be, you don't have additional injury risk. Maybe it's true. I'm not a medical professional. Somebody else could inform me on that. Please hit us up, by the way, if you're listening to this, respond in Twitter to one of the promos to the show and just say, hey, I look at knees every day. I'm an orthopedist, and this is, you know, such and such kind of thing. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
All right. Slava, always a pleasure doing this show with you. How can folks reach you if they have a question for you online?
I'm on Twitter at Slava Cooperstein. That's SlavaKuperstein.
Thanks very much for listening, folks. As always, use hashtag Film Study Mailbag if you want to reach any of the shows. You can be specific about who you'd like to answer the question, whether it's a one last thing question or a Voss question for the Friday morning GM show, or an offense or defense question. I'll try and allocate it properly to the right show. Thanks as always. Again, if you can tell one more person about the show, we depend heavily on word of mouth. For Slava Cooperstein, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week on One Last Thing.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.